Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Do well at faking nice, their closed minds and open house is what keeps them on the night. I shouldn't have probably thought twice before I picked up my phone, but I bet you next time they're gonna leave well enough alone. She should have never said yes after he said not in my house. We were just an excuse to let them bigotry come out. Then came the backsliding, the lies and the blame, and I tried to keep quiet, but I heard myself say, I'm not gonna back down. I'm not gonna keep your little secret. If it's a fight you want, I'm gonna make sure you get it. Don't you gun for my family and expect me to just take it. I got a candidate justice. I never miss when I aim it.
You're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 475. I'm Amy Matheny, and hey, everybody, happy Pride. I hope you had a wonderful Pride weekend. If you live in the Chicagoland area, you survived. Lots of changes to the parade. We're going to want to hear what you thought of them. Was it better? Was it easier to navigate? We'll talk about that in the upcoming show, probably. But definitely give us your feedback. Give us a call at 312-21-BE-GAY and let us know if you thought the changes to the parade going straight and the way the cops handle the parade worked better or did not. But on today's show, I'm so excited and so proud that somebody that I've known for a long time is achieving such success. Paul Oakley Stovall is a writer, an actor, singer, and also works for the White House. That's right. He works for the Obama administration. He's written a new play. It's called Immediate Family. It's playing at the Goodman Theater, and it is getting huge reviews, diverse audiences, and lots of critical success. And it's a story about us, people like us. And people in the African-American community, families, gay people, interracial couples. There's so many cool stories going on, but it's funny, funny, funny. And I hope that you will check it out. I'm going to sit down with Paul. We're going to talk about Immediate Family, directed by Claire Huxtable, Felicia Rashad. I'm so excited to talk with Paul. And coming up in upcoming weeks, I'm also going to be talking with our new Windy City gay idol, Robert Hughes. I'm so excited about that interview as well. There's so much stuff coming up. And also, we're going to be talking about GLBT travel in the weeks ahead. So it's a big show. Rock of Ages, the movie. Is Tom Cruise hot enough to keep this movie rocking for many, many weeks this summer? Richard Knight Jr. will give us his take on that. And what's going on in the GLBT news and theater, because there's a lot of theater going on and much, much more. So, wow, Pride Month continues. We are not to July yet. One more whole week of June. So let's take it out in a pride-filled way.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. Pittsburgh Mayor Luke Ravenstahl is now supporting marriage equality after once opposing it. Ravenstahl, who is 32, said he joined Mayors for the Freedom to Marry, a movement to legalize same-sex marriage across the country.
General Mills is taking a stand against a proposed state constitutional amendment to ban same-sex marriage. Chief Executive Ken Powell voiced the company's opposition at a company function attended by 400 gay and lesbian professionals, followed the next day by an online letter from the company's Vice President for Global Diversity and Inclusion, Ken Charles.
Darun Ravi, the former Rutgers University student whose spying led to the suicide of his roommate Tyler Clementi, was released from jail after serving 20 days of a 30-day sentence. Ravi had 10 days removed from his sentence for good behavior in accordance with state regulations. Also, Ravi, who was found guilty of invasion of privacy and bias intimidation, will not face deportation.
Tracy Thorne Beglin is becoming Virginia's first openly gay judge after all. A month after the state's General Assembly rejected his nomination, the judges of the Richmond Circuit Court voted to appoint him to fill a vacancy on the city's General District Court. The appointment, however, lasts only until the next legislative session, which convenes in 2013. Thorne Beglin's term begins July 1st.
At the recent White House LGBT reception, a transgender man proposed to his partners. Scout, whose full name is legally one word, popped the question to Liz Margulies minutes after President Obama addressed the guests. Scout got down on his knee in the middle of Cross Hall, the main hallway on the first floor of the White House. Since Scout is legally male, the marriage will be recognized as a heterosexual union.
The number of U.S. hospitals striving to treat LGBT patients equally and respectfully is on the rise. The most recent Healthcare Equality Index, an annual survey the HRC Foundation administers, shows a 162 increase in the number of facilities achieving the status of leader in LGBT healthcare equality.
GLAAD has announced an official partnership with Athlete Ally, an organization working toward full equality for LGBT people in the world of athletics. Together, the group will offer proactive athlete ally trainings for men's professional sports teams, as well as the WNBA, a total of 153 professional squads.
The New York State Court of Appeals ruled that the state's students at public colleges cannot use the New York Human Rights Law to obtain recognition of discrimination or get financial compensation for such discrimination. The law prohibits discrimination based on age, race, creed, color, national origin, sexual orientation, military status, sex, or marital status. Students at New York private schools can still use the law.
In New York, 14-year-old Cardin Ulissi has been left blind in one eye after schoolmates allegedly attacked him because of his perceived sexual orientation. Ulissi, an eighth grader, has undergone two surgeries on his right eye after the June 5th attack. The attackers, a pair of seventh graders, reportedly screamed anti-gay slurs at Ulissi while they punched him.
Sir Elton John will give the keynote address at the 19th International AIDS Conference in Washington, D.C. on July 23rd. John is the founder of the Elton John AIDS Foundation, which has raised more than $275 million in the United States and the United Kingdom. President Bill Clinton and philanthropist Bill Gates will also speak at the conference, which will take place July 22nd through 27th, and is expected to draw 25,000 attendees.
The two most powerful elected officials in New York City, Mayor Michael Bloomberg and Lesbian City Council Speaker Christine Quinn, are planning to file a joint amicus brief in the support of Edith Windsor's challenge to DOMA. Windsor, who's 83, sued the federal government over $363,000 in taxes she had to pay on the estate of her late wife and partner of more than 40 years, Thea Speyer, because they were not recognized as married.
The conservative gay rights group Go Proud has endorsed Republican Mitt Romney as president. The organization cited his economic positions while noting its differences with the candidate on the issue of same-sex marriage.
In New Jersey, the co-defendant who testified at the trial of a man charged with fatally shooting a transgender woman has been sentenced to time served. Marquise Foster, 26, was originally charged along with Al-Rashim Chambers in the September 2010 killing of Victoria Carmen White. The jury acquitted Chambers, 25, of all charges at his recent murder trial at Superior Court in Newark, despite Foster's testimony naming Chambers as the killer.
In New York City, a group of people is pushing for Christopher Street to become a gay landmark. Robert Ziegler of the West Village Coalition said he wants to see rainbow flags and a walk of fame along the street from its start at 6th Avenue to the Hudson River. The Stonewall Inn, the site of the Stonewall Riots in 1969, is located on Christopher Street.
In world news, Luca Rocco Magnata, 29, has been returned to Canada and has been charged with first-degree murder and the killing and dismemberment of Montreal University student June Lin. Magnata, a 29-year-old who was performing in gay porn movies, was flown from Germany to Quebec's Mirabel Airport by military plane. Magnata was arrested in a Berlin cyber cafe June 4th after a worldwide manhunt.
Uganda said it is banning 38 non-governmental organizations it accuses of promoting homosexuality and recruiting children. Ethics Minister Simon Lokoto said the groups were receiving support for those alleged purposes. He did not name which organizations were on the list.
In Australia, the state of Queensland will remove same-sex couples' ability to have children through surrogacy and will downgrade civil partnerships to the class of registered relationships. The Legislative Assembly in Brisbane agreed to significantly alter the provisions of the Civil Partnerships Act 2011, which came into force earlier this year after control of the House swung to the right. However, the Conservative Liberal National Party took control of the Parliament from the Labour Party in March.
Gay rights charity Stonewall has updated its guide to the gay-friendly credentials of the United Kingdom's 150 universities. Gay by Degree 2013 is available online. Current students can also register to share information about their experiences. Gay by Degree uses 10 factors to identify how well universities support LGBT people.
In entertainment news, Lindsay Lohan was found unconscious in a Los Angeles hotel on June 15th. Paramedics were called to the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Marina Del Rey shortly after Lohan had called the production team of her new movie, Liz and Dick, and said she wasn't feeling well. There is no report that drugs or alcohol were involved in the incident.
Singer-songwriter Brandi Carlile is engaged to girlfriend Catherine Shepherd. Carlile and Shepherd spearhead the Looking Out Foundation, a charity Carlile founded in 2008 that seeks to support through music humanitarian outreach efforts in local communities and beyond.
Simpsons creator Matt Groening is ending the gay-inclusive comic strip Life in Hell, his first claim to fame, as alternative newspapers' budgets dwindle. The 1,669th and last Life in Hell installment went out on June 15th.
Broadway Bears 22 Happy Endings, an evening of modern-day burlesque presented June 17th at the Roseland Ballroom, raised more funds than any previous Broadway Bears production. This year's event raised more than $1.2 million to benefit Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. The 22 editions of Broadway Bears have raised almost $10 million for Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS.
Frenchie Davis, who has competed on American Idol and The Voice, has come out of the closet. She's been dating a woman for the past year. Frenchie says, "I wasn't out before the relationship, but I wasn't in. I dated men and women, though lesbians weren't feeling the bisexual thing. Now I'm in love with a woman I think I can be with forever."
It appears that Logo has pulled the plug on the gay reality show The A-List New York. Logo is reportedly moving away from LGBT-focused programming, although it's retaining RuPaul's Drag Race.
And Glee is enlarging its guest star roster by adding an American Idol finalist. The show is negotiating with Jessica Sanchez, the runner-up from this past season, to appear in a multi-episode arc. Sanchez will join Kate Hudson, Sarah Jessica Parker, who are slated to appear next season. Also, Glee will move from Tuesdays to Thursdays in September, pairing it with Idol. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey, this is Cindy Lauper. Big shout out to Windy City Clearcast.
Let's go to the movies anyway and see.
I'm Richard Knight Jr., and this is your Night at the Movies Mega Minute. The opening medley of Rock of Ages, out director Adam Shankman's film adaptation of the Broadway jukebox musical hit, is so painfully familiar and phony to wise up audiences that the immediate derisive laughter and groans that greeted are unsurprising. At this late date, 75 years or so after Rock's After 42nd Street, the template for all subsequent movies and shows of this ilk, and there are tons of them, how could this reaction not have been expected by everyone connected with the movie, right down to the folks manning the craft service table? It's only been 2 years since the gay and all but named burlesque with Cher and Christina Aguilera, but here we go again with another gay director enacting another variation on this Jurassic-aged material. Just once, I'd like to see a girl from the big city head to Kansas in pursuit of her dream of becoming a farmer or cattle bearer. Unlike Steve Anton, who helmed burlesque, Shankman, who choreographs as well as directs, does have spot-on musical expertise, and he did manage to bring a certain amount of freshness to 2007's Hairspray. So there's a smidgen of hope, even after that calculated opening number, that he'll be able to turn this creaky old tub of a movie in another, fresher direction, too. But Shankman doesn't. And even with the cast that includes Alec Baldwin, Russell Brand, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Mary J. Blige, rising stars Gillian Huff, Bryan Cranston and Paul Giamatti, this overstuffed turkey is cooked before it hits the opening number. Then there is the stunt casting of Tom Cruise as Stacey Jacks, the debauched mega rock star. Cruise enters the movie shirtless and stays that way, and also at this point wears a bejeweled jock strap and leather chaps. Looks good so far, and he certainly does look and act the part of a narcissistic rock star. And he also sings in a sometimes light, sometimes husky tenor with enough finesse to make you actually believe he could pull off the power rock song. But, as usual, all of Cruise's hard work goes only into creating the exterior of the character. Ironically, just like the patently phony songs he belts out, there's not 1 second of his performance that feels real. Ooh, ouch. Rock of Ages would have been more honestly titled Rock for Ages, because that's how long this headbanger's ball seems to go on and on and on and on. Sort of like this movie review. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Mega, 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 Mega Minute.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of June 25th, 2012, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Don't miss the most anticipated new musical of the summer. Eastland tells the true Chicago story of the passengers on the ill-fated boat that capsized on the Chicago River in 1915. Unforgettable melodies and soaring harmonies give voice to the victims and heroes of that fateful day. For tickets to Eastland, go to lookingglasstheater.org, now playing through July 29th.
Main Stage in Rogers Park presents 80s new wave artist Howard Jones, performing albums Dream Into Action and Humans Lib back-to-back on July 10th. And don't miss Queer as Folk cast member Hal Sparks in 5 stand-up shows September 6th, 7th, and 8th. Tickets for both shows at mainstage.com. That's M-A-Y-N-E, stage.com.
David Drake's The Night Larry Kramer Kissed Me, a beautiful play about a gay man coming into a life of protest and glory, is presented in a 20th anniversary production by Glitterati Productions and Pride Films and Plays. Chad Ryan stars in The Night Larry Kramer Kissed Me, now through July 1st, only at Luna Central, 3914 North Clark Street. For tickets, visit pridefilmsandplays.com.
Don't miss Immediate Family, a new American play written by Paul Oakley Stovall and directed by Tony Award winner Felicia Rashad. Modern family meets soul food in Immediate Family, a funny, heartwarming show set in Chicago's Hyde Park. Immediate Family's playing now through August 5th at the Goodman Theater. Visit ImmediateFamilyPlay.com.
Oedipus El Rey is a sexy, modern Latino take on the Oedipus story. $15 tickets available for previews now through July 8th. Use code WINDY at victorygardens.org. Oedipus El Rey runs through July 29th at Victory Gardens Theater. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller? Post a comment at WindyCityQueerCast.com. Stovall has a huge life. He's a member of About Face Theater, a performer, actor, and singer, and a playwright who claims as his side job just a little gig staying at the side of First Lady Michelle Obama on her travels as First Lady. And he has worked for the Obama administration before the inauguration, as far back as on the campaign trail. But now he is wearing his playwright hat. He's telling a new story, a new gay story, a new American story, a new black story of family, siblings, and change in his new, moving, and laugh-out-loud funny play, Immediate Family, directed by Tony Award winner Felicia Rashad, that is garnering delicious reviews at the Goodman Theater in Chicago. And as you all know, Mitchell and I saw it this past week, and we are raving. Run, don't walk. Do not miss this show. So I'm thrilled to have Paul on the show just to talk about all kinds of things. Hey, Paul, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm in Denver, so the altitude is really getting to me, but I'm hanging in there.
You're hanging in there. The allergies are getting me here. So, you know, I think it's the new normal of weather has got us all a little verklempt, doesn't it? Well, first of all, let me just say, you know, I've known you, full disclosure, I've known Paul for over a decade, and I am so proud of you. I've always been proud of you, but it's just such a wonderful experience to sit and watch something that someone has created and just bask in a full audience watching it and loving you and loving the story that you're telling as much as I was and being as moved by it. So first of all, just congratulations, my friend. You
Thank you, my dear friend. Very, very happy.
Talk to me about when you began writing Immediate Family, what has come to be known now as Immediate Family. And I believe I was around back then because I remember some of the early ideas. So when did you begin and what were some of those early kernels for our
listeners? I began working on it in earnest back in 2000, 2001. I was doing a lot of work with About Face, and there was a festival of new works that that you all were putting together. I think I had become a company member by then, and I said, oh, I want to participate in that festival, but I had never written anything. And so they're like, well, you got to write something. You know, that's what it's for. You can't, what do you, you know, you got to do it. So I wrote a scene that I just thought I made up three characters and wrote a scene and pretended like there was a whole play beyond that scene.
Yeah. What was the scene? What was the initial spark scene?
The initial, you know me, the original scene was Tony and Jesse at a bar and Christian arriving at that bar and Tony meeting him and seeing that he's white.
Mm-hmm. So there was Tony little scene is with Jesse's Tony and, brother, right? So Jesse is the central.
Yeah. So it was Jesse kind of preparing Tony to meet this man and Tony handling it pretty well and saying, yeah, it's not a big deal. You know, I already knew this about you. Yeah. Then Christian shows up and he's white and the tension around that.
Yeah. Talk to me about
that.
I mean, you're an African-American male and an openly gay male living in America. Is that something that is explored, do you feel, on television and film in any type of pop culture whatsoever?
Well, it's represented, but it's not explored. You use the word that I want to kind of grab onto. You'll have the best friend or you'll have the, you know, RuPaul's Drag Race, which I love actually. So, you know, I'm just putting that out there.
Right.
But the exploration is not there of the day to day of what it's like to be in that skin in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know anything else to write for my first, you know, venture into this world of playwriting.
So do you, and obviously the play evolved, you started writing on it more. Did you pick it up again in earnest and really go, I've got something here and I know what the bigger story is? Because it's really the story about family, right? It's really the story about family. Just set everybody up about kind of who the characters are and the setting and all of that.
Yeah. What happened after that scene was read at the festival, the board was there and the response was great. The comments I got were, oh, well, I wonder what the rest of the family's like, or what, how they would react. And I thought, that's my story right there. Mm. It's not about this couple and their romance and all of that. It's about the family. And it's a real dangerous and scary place to go. So for those who haven't seen it, the setup is these are adult siblings coming together for the wedding of the youngest brother. Now, they've been fractured for many years since their parents died. you know, they felt no connection, so they just sort of all drifted away from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So this coming together is not only in the positive way to support the wedding, but also, you know, there's going to be some decisions made on, do I really want you in my life? I mean, now that mom and dad are gone, what reason would I have to? It's blood thicker than water.
Mm-hmm. And the choices we make.
Family can come in many forms.
Right. And the choices we make of keeping people in our family, because I think, you know, we talk about this a lot on the podcast that, you know, oftentimes we create new families because our families of origin don't work for us. And then sometimes part of our families of origin work for us, but other parts don't. And I think that's a really, it may be only a story for GLBT people. I don't know if that's entirely true, but it definitely is a strong story for GLBT people.
Absolutely. I think it's also, I was very determined, especially as it developed more recently. I mean, it had some non-equity productions done, and I was still just finding my way. But as I really started honing in, and when Felicia came on board, it started to dawn on me that what's presented to the world by mainstream media about gay culture and about Black culture is this sort of, you know, oh, gay, you have one friend one week, another friend another week, and gay people just la la la. They don't have that any kind of core loyalty. And when they you know, because we work a lot in chosen family, but I think the idea that people have of the gay community is that it's very ungrounded. Mm-hmm. And in the Black community, we have this idea that it's all these fractured families and you know, single parent homes, and I just think that's not. It is not true.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to show another side of it.
Yeah. So Jesse,
the side that I grew up in.
Right. So Jesse brings home his white Swedish boyfriend. You can't get more white than that. Christian, which is the original spark that you brought to the very early scene back in 2000, which seems to be a conversation about race or racism in the Black community. So if his brother's, you know, kind of okay, and he was worried about telling him he's gay, and the brother's like, I know you're gay. I've known you're gay. And the big shocker, the big thing that is the juggernaut is that he's dating a white guy. What is that conversation about race that you felt like was, maybe had not been talked about? 'Cause I don't know that I've seen it talked in a way, in such a contemporary way as you do in Immediate Family.
I mean, you know, for me, the bigger thing is not that Tony was upset that he was white, but why he's upset that he's white. And a little bit later in the scene, Tony says to Jesse, I at least thought he was going to be Black because that way everybody could just pretend like he was our cousin.
Ah. So, yeah, so what's this, you know, white guy doing here?
You know, the thing is, it's not like Tony doesn't like white people. He understands on a larger scale that in the Black community, we'll just pretend like we didn't see that. So I was trying to actually make a comment more on, we need to acknowledge what we see, however it comes to us.
Right.
Acknowledge what we see it, and don't pretend like what we see right in front of us is not happening. That's step number one to healing.
Is this, Paul, do you think, and I'm just having this aha moment as we're talking, that... that this notion, you know, and I've even used this, you know, back when General Colin Powell, you know, years ago, obviously he's changed his stance now, but, you know, he kind of didn't want to associate the GLBT civil rights story with the African-American civil rights story and said, you know, we could never hide. And I've even said, you know, what a difference it would be if we were all purple or something, you know, something was the same, like we had a third eye in the center of our head or something that we went, we can't hide. We cannot be closeted. This is kind of an interesting point that you're making of, you know, that the African-American community has had to deal with because we're talking about a color of skin is the only thing that separates that community from the next. And I find that really compelling. And
Well, and what a lot of white America doesn't know. I also, you know, it was very important to me to show, I hope I don't go off on a tangent. It was very important for me to show Black people, educated, upper middle class Black people, how we really are. We have been written in other pieces, but usually by white writers. or, well, I shouldn't make that generalization, but I wanted to show our linguistic facility. I wanted to not have any shame around the way we really talk when we are alone together.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, so you can still have a degree from Howard, but then you can still speak in a very urban patois.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I just didn't want to shy away from it. But, you know, what a lot of white America doesn't know is this color thing did happen, this hiding thing, it did and does happen in the black community. And we do it through skin, how light your skin is.
Mm.
So you can't totally hide, although there are people who we would say they're passing. That's a term that we would use, you're passing, if they were light enough that they would actually live in the white world.
Right.
Now, some are not as light enough to pass, but they're like, you know, like the sister in the show.
Yeah.
She probably has an easier time in the world because of her naturally long straight hair and her lighter skin.
Right. This is the half-sister of the siblings.
Yes, the half-sister.
You know, it's interesting because I totally, when you talk about that, you know, I think of one of my earliest favorite movies to watch with my mother on Turner Broadcast Network when I was a kid was Imitation of Life, you know, and that was the whole big moment where, you know, the big climatic moment is that, you know, it's the lead character, you know, is white. She has a black servant. Their two daughters grow up side by side. Uh-huh. The African-American daughter is so fair that she passes for being white, you know, when the mother dies and she's running after the casket, you know, with the white horses and the black lacquered, you know, coach. And she's, you know, screaming after her mother, you know, forgive me, mother. And it just used to shatter me. And I mean, I'm a, you know, 10, 11 year old white girl in the South. Like I have no connection to that, but, But that emotion and that story of just rejecting one's identity, rejecting oneself, I obviously came to know when those decisions come up for us as GLBT people.
That's right. Dirty little secrets, you know.
Right? Yeah.
So that was very interesting to me that black people, you know, we do try to pretend like, oh, we can't relate to that's a completely different thing, you know. Mm-hmm. Gay, but as you know, it isn't. We just people tend to have short memory spans. When they're trying to get theirs, not worried about the next person. You know what I'm saying?
Is it fair that probably one of the most overriding thoughts about at least the black gay male community is this concept of the down low, this concept of hiding? It's not what you're talking about really in your play, but it obviously even comes up in his reference there. Is there a need for a new story to be told about black gay men?
I don't know if there's a need for a new one, but there's just a need for more. Mm. It's all so complicated and rich, and it's been treated so two-dimensionally, and it needs to be told from the different perspectives as well.
Yeah.
And that's all I can say about that.
How'd you connect with Miss Rashad?
Oh, Miss Dame Rashad. I saw her in August, Osage County. When she stepped in on Broadway. And I went backstage afterwards, but I went to see Mary Ann Mayberry and Amy Morton, all those, you know, some of the Steppenwolf people that I knew. But I thought, you know, if I can slide by her dressing room, I would love to just say, hi, you're great. Well, it turns out me and a bunch of other friends that just happened to be at the show that night, we all just kind of, I just followed a pack and we all just went into her dressing room and they all knew her. And I just stood in the side and, at one point, she turned and said hello, and I was like, oh, hello, you were great. I'm a friend of Marianne's, and oh, that's nice. And that was kind of it. And then last 4th of July, a year ago, 4th of July, I was in Chicago at the Independence Day reading at Pritzker Pavilion, and Aoife Baeza, who wrote a musical called Charleston Oleo, had just lost an actor for the workshop. Ron L.J. Parsons suggested me. I said, sure. I look up, and there's Felicia Rashad in the cast. So we just got to know each other working on this week-long workshop of this new musical down in Mississippi. And everything went from there. I got the courage to send her the script. She actually read it, which was great. Doesn't happen too often that way.
Right.
And then a couple of months later, I was on shaky ground with the director that we had in line. That we had lined up, and I went to her and said, would you be interested in doing this?
Wow.
Lucky me. he took the gig.
And I really feel like, you know, from what I know and just some things that I've read, you know, you two were a really good pair, that she was diligent about helping just tell this story clearly, you know, helping you, being a great shepherd to help you tell this story clearly.
Oh, she was great. The biggest thing she did was I had, you know, she jokes with me and says, you know, you wrote the screenplay before you wrote the play, because I had 8 locations and, you know, but see what she, I mean, she was right. But what she didn't know was that I had come up in this Mary Zimmerman world of theater where 1 minute you're in Buddha heaven, the next second you're on a frozen river, the next second you're at a castle, and you just do it, you know.
Right. And
but
so
she was coming from this sort of no. This is, it needs to be in the house. The house needs to be a character in the show. We need to get rid of all those locations, and actually it will help you. It'll be like burning off the fat. You'll see what's necessary. You'll see what's necessary, and it'll find its way into the play if it really needs to be there.
Yeah. How long was that process of working with her and working with the script to, from that moment when she came on board to the production opening at the Goodman?
Oh, we did it all in like 2 months.
Oh, my gosh.
It was daily. I did about 4 huge overhaul rewrites. I mean, huge. Like, you know, the first time through, I got it down to 4 locations, and she was like, I'm on this, you know, she's in touch with the set designer, and he's trying to figure it out. You know, he's like, look, I got to go with something soon. She's trying to get it down to 3. I'd do another huge rewrite. And we're talking like staying up for 48 hours straight.
Yeah.
Because at the same time, I'm working, you know.
Yep.
I'm in some hotel room somewhere, you know. So it was rough, but
But that's a lot of trust, Paul. I mean, that's just a lot of like leap of faith stuff when you go from 8 locations to 1 location, which is where you ended up, which is all taking place in the central part of the house.
Oh, I mean, so much changed. I mean, even the reveal that Christian's white, that came out of doing this, because you used to see Christian in the first scene of the show. So the audience already, I mean, all, like she said, all these magical things are going to come to you once you put it only in the house. Then we don't see Jesse and Christian traveling together. Then I have to come up with, well, how could Jesse maybe get there first and Christian come later? All of that came in the last, you know, month and a half. Nina living next door, all of that came, you know, she used to be traveling with Jesse, so you saw her earlier.
Yeah.
Girl, it was a mess.
Those are some leaps. So what is the next big leap? I mean, the play is doing so well here. It's getting such great reviews. I was there with an audience, and I have to say it was just such a diverse audience. And I have to say, too, though, very different perspectives on who laughed at what, who was comfortable with what. You know, some people really uncomfortable with the two guys together. Not that there's any overt graphic sexuality.
Right.
I actually thought that stuff was handled so beautifully, but
you
know, there were interesting titters around that. There were interesting different people. I mean, you know, whatever your lens is, you are laughing at this story at different moments, which I found very intriguing.
I love it too. I talk about it all the time. My friend Rusty Schwimmer came to see. Oh, you know Rusty.
I know Rusty.
God.
She's playing my wifey in Scrooge and Marley.
Yeah, yeah. So Rusty had a wonderful comment. You know, Rusty kind of works in every world, you know.
Yep.
She knows a lot about the black community. She knows everything, you know.
Yep.
So she was laughing all through it. But she was like, Paul, I kept noticing, like, the black people, when there'd be a joke about the card game or something, she was like, there was a whole section that really knew the ins and outs of that impenetrably difficult card game if you don't know how to play it.
Yep.
But the producers were, you know, they'd always say to me, can we just, you know, dumb that down a little or just make it simpler? And I'm like, no, because it's not about knowing how to play the game.
Yeah.
It's about watching the facility of these actors and watching the tensions between them based on the game. Like, I don't even care if you know how to play the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And then there's things that, and then she said, you know, she'd hear the men tittering at the end.
Yeah.
But she said, what was beautiful is how they're in an audience that's got LGBT people, women, black people, young people, older people. A woman brought her 89-year-old mother for her birthday.
Yep.
And she says you can feel people changing in that 2 minutes where they move through the house.
Yep.
You can feel them going, ha, 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 ha. Oh, wait, I'm the only one laughing. Ha,
yep. Yeah, that's exactly, exactly right. It really is an interesting thing to experience. This is a very interesting play to experience with other people. And at the same time, I mean, I literally, my face hurt. I laughed so hard. I just, it was great. It's like a great abdominal workout for those of you gays who like to get those abs worked out. What is,
can we talk about Dana Cole Brooks?
Yeah, okay, you mentioned the producers. Is the hope to take the play to New York? And what is next for the play?
Yes, absolutely. That is the hope. You know what? I can't say too much about it right now. There's other regional theaters asking for the scripts, and the producers have said, you know, let's put them on hold because we have to figure out what we're going to do next.
Yeah. And obviously, it's very ripe for film, whether television, movie, or film, or there's a lot that can be done with the story.
All that's in there too. They've already commissioned the screenplay and all that.
Excellent. Well, it's really it's so accessible, you know, in this world of Modern Family and some of the shows that we have on TV today, not so many of the movies. So it'd be really nice to see this as a film. You know, it feels very ripe, but at the same time, very accessible to the mainstream American culture. And I encourage everybody to go out and see it for sure. And we'll have the website, immediatefamilyplay.com, where you can get your tickets, because it's only running through August 5th at the Goodman Theater, and you're going to want to catch it. We'll have that linked in our show notes. Can I talk to you just a few minutes? Because I just want to take the opportunity, because Mitchell and I have been talking a lot around this Pride Month, just about the community, obviously, during Gay Pride. And while he was on the boat coming back, you know, the announcement came out about, whether Biden kind of set it up for the kick-in or not, but President Obama coming out, you know, and stating his changed viewpoint and perspective on same-sex marriage.
Evolved. We call it evolved.
So tell me first, what is your official title with the Obamas right now?
I serve as an advanced associate for the administration. Media logistics.
Media logistics. And you've been working with the Obamas since before he was elected, correct?
Yes. April of 2008, I started doing a little freelance, and then they brought me on full time in June on the campaign staff. Now, things changed once they got elected. So I'm no longer full time, and I don't have that time anyway these days, but I still do. I'm back to sort of actually freelancing. I do it whenever I have time.
Yeah. And so how did you, I want to ask you about how you felt about two things. How did you feel about Obama's evolved statement? Number one, what impact do you think that has? Let's start there.
Well, I felt great about it. I mean, I think that people kind of don't allow themselves to have the joy anymore and just say, you know what, why pick it apart? Why worry about who said what first? He said it. It's never been said before.
Yep.
That's an amazing thing. You know, so that's how I feel. I just, every day, I'm so excited to be alive to have witnessed that happen, whether I worked with them or not. It's just amazing.
And it does create, I mean, I was saying on a podcast, you know, with Shelley Wright, who's coming to town, and we were talking about this, and I said, you know, some of my friends, gay and straight, said, you know, but what does that really do? And I said, it does everything. It makes everything possible. Do you feel
That's
the
right.
same way about that?
I absolutely do. I feel like people put too much responsibility on one person's shoulders. Yes, he is the president. But, you know, if you understand how government works, he can't just make it happen overnight. One of the ways to make it happen is to do what he did. To say what he said. That sets things in motion. Mm-hmm. You see the effect that's having on the NAACP and the black community?
Well, that's what I wanted to ask
you.
That's my second question is what do you feel the NAACP backing now same-sex marriage, what impact is that going to have for the black community? And even for the fantastic timing of your play coming out at this moment?
Yeah, no, I can't even... I mean,
girl, you can capitalize on that.
you know, what effect? Say the question again. I'm too excited.
Well, you're too excited. The NAACP backs same-sex marriage. I want to know what kind of impact you think that has on the Black community, and do you think we're going to have fractured, you know, we've already started seeing fractions, but it has already seemed to be changing
and allowing
Black leaders and voices to start speaking out in a way that they really felt, but as you said, we're kind of being in the closet or down low about.
You took it right out of my mouth. I was going to say, it's like people are coming out of the closet with their always held feeling that, you know what, I actually don't even really care. It doesn't, let them get married, who cares? Because I think that's what it is. It isn't like you have to be pro marriage equality. I think the truth is most people are like, why again am I taking away their rights?
Right.
Like the guy I talked about in the audience, he's laughing at it and then slowly realizing he's the only one laughing and then has to ask himself, now, wait a minute, why am I laughing?
Mm-hmm.
Why do I even care?
Mm-hmm.
So people are having to ask themselves the question, and the answer is clear. You shouldn't care. Byron Rustin famously said, all Black people and all gay people should be at any march that has to do with women's rights. All women and all Black people should be at any LGBT march. And all LGBT people and all women should be at any march for Black civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
Because if if you don't support the other group that's being oppressed, you better believe you're next.
Yep.
And I think Black people are figuring that out in a very real way. You know, it was the LGBT community showed up big in the 60s.
Yeah.
At civil rights marches. We were there.
Mm-hmm.
So the Black community is starting to realize, like, this couching myself in God says this and God says that is not working anymore. The world is turning, and it's going to turn without you if you don't move along.
How do you feel about the second term and the upcoming election? Do you think Obama is in jeopardy, and do you think it is a new call to action and not a call to complacency to all those people who worked so hard 4 years ago? I mean, how do we fire people up to seem that they don't have to stay home, and if they want to continue what's happening, how do we energize people to do that?
I do not think he's in jeopardy, but I do think it is a call to action. And I do believe it's going to happen. I mean, you know, Romney is the, you know, we're the incumbent. So it just feels different. And I understand the concern people have. But, you know, I'd say turn off the TV and go knock on a few doors. The TV, they need people to watch, so they inflate the issue.
Mm-hmm.
But from the world, from the view that I see it, and, you know, I'm not inside the bubble, but the view that I have is, our support is great at rallies, and that, I don't know. I guess I choose not to worry, and that I know that is my choice.
Yeah. So
I don't think worrying will get me very far in life.
Yeah, no, exactly. It won't at all.
Yeah.
Tell me, just because you've had such an inside viewpoint on the, I'm not asking you to tell me secrets, but just, I wouldn't do that. But, tell me kind of a favorite thing about President Obama, and especially Michelle Obama, because the First Lady, because I know you've spent so much time with her that people might not know, or just a memory or a reflection of each of them, if you would, individually.
God, I have to think way back for the president, because I've been working with the First Lady.
Well, then just tell me about Michelle, because she's the cooler of the two, anyhow.
One thing he did when we were in Virginia on a trip years ago, he really takes the time. If you have a second, and I'll pull aside his assistant, his body person, they call it, Marv Nicholson, and I say, hey, you know, this volunteer, this kid did everything this week. I mean, Marv, if we can somehow get him in the photo line, and, you know, he went above and beyond, this volunteer. And Marv will do it, and he'll say, tell me about him, and I'll tell him. And sure enough, the president would take 2, 3, 4 minutes when I just thought a quick handshake would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
So he just goes out of his way. Same thing with Mrs. Obama. I was doing an event in Harlem, and there was a kid that was getting picked on. I can't say for sure that he's going to be a future LGBT citizen, but that seemed to be the case.
Yep.
The way the other kids were picking on him, it was a Let's Move event. They all knew that a special guest was coming, so we had to watch them do what their workout drill is. And these kids were just ripping into him. So he walked out, and I saw him walk out, and I got a minute to excuse myself. And he's sitting on the bench outside, heaving, crying. He doesn't even know who I am. I just sat next to him and said, hey, you know, one day you're going to be bigger and taller like me, and you're going to forget all of this, and I need you to show up on Thursday, because he was saying how he's not going to come mm-hmm. to the event. Mm-hmm. No, they always pick on me. They always make fun of me. They call me sissy and all of this. Couldn't stop crying, the kid. And I said, you know what? If you come on Thursday, I promise you I'm not going to let anybody pick on you, and I'm going to make it a special day for you. So he said, okay, maybe. He showed up that morning. I immediately emailed Mrs. Obama's personal aide and said, listen, here's the story, blah, 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 blah. They emailed me back and said, point the kid out to her when she gets there. She's going to take care of it. Sure enough, when she got there, I pointed the kid out to her, and she chose him as, like, her workout buddy for the day.
Aww.
And made him, like, the special, you know, all the photographs were her and this kid. And all the other kids were so, you know, jealous, and I loved it.
I love her. I love her so much, and she is a fantastic first lady. Well, everybody, please go see Paul Oakley Stovall's play, Immediate Family. It's a new American play directed by Tony Award winner Felicia Rashad. It's playing now through August 5th at the Goodman Theater, and for tickets, go to immediatefamilyplay.com. Paul, please keep in touch with us, and we hope to have you on the show again real soon.
I can't wait. Thank you so much, Amy. Thanks, everybody.
Got something to say? Us today, 312-21-BE-GAY. Well, everybody, I hope you enjoyed this last week of Pride Month in Chicago and in New York and in Florida and Tennessee and Utah and California and Toronto and wherever you are listening to us from around the world. We are thrilled and proud to have you as our audience, thrilled and proud to have you be a consistent and weekly listener to the Windy City Queercast, and please stay in touch with us. Let us know what you think. You can email us at podcast@windycitymediagroup.com. You can call and leave a message, 312-21-BE-GAY. We'd love to hear from you. Coming up in our next show, we're going to have some interviews from Jerry Nunn, and also coming up in future weeks, we're going to be talking about travel, American Airlines, and I'll tell you where I'm traveling to, and much, much more. Mitchell will be on the show with me as well. So have a great rest of your Pride Month, everyone, and I'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.